Welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition. We're going to shift a little bit away from the metals and resource sector and talk more with Mike Larson. Mike writes the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Mike joins me every couple weeks for more of a generalist look at what's going on in the markets. And it's interesting because just this, well, today, actually on Saturday, Mike is presenting at the Money Show in Orlando. And we are talking about what his presentation is on. And it is more about where he thinks you can safely invest in still this environment where the argument can be made there is this Uber bubble sitting out there. Mike, can you break down some of the high-level points of where you do see some of still the opportunities and safety investments?
Sure. You know, like you mentioned, I'll be talking to investors today and looking at what's going on in the markets from a broader perspective. And I think what's really interesting is we've had this big rally, which a lot of people have talked about, like, oh my gosh, you know, the S&P, the Dow are up sharply in January and early February, which is true. But, you know, the flip side of that is that we were down incredibly sharply and lost so much ground in December that all we've done when you net it all out is tread water. I mean, we're exactly right now, we're trading roughly around where we were in early December. So we had panic and euphoria in the span of 2 months, but ultimately went nowhere. I think this kind of speaks to the overall market environment being much more volatile than it was in the prior several years. You know, we came through an extraordinary period of extremely low interest rates, extreme policy certainty, whether you're talking about political certainty or economic and monetary certainty, to now we're in this environment where, you know, people are running from one side of the boat to the other in record short amounts of time. And again, that leads to sort of really bad decisions if investors aren't prepared for it and don't know how to navigate these choppier seas. We had our hands held for us by central banks for so long that I think investors have sort of lost that muscle memory of how to actually invest and trade in a market where it takes more than just policy pronouncements to drive trading activity. So with that being said, my message is going to be that we're still in an environment where, and I've been saying it for a year, we're still in an environment where we have to be more cautious, more conservative, have higher levels of cash, and look for gains in sectors and stocks that aren't talked about on TV every day and that aren't as popular as the investments that used to work between sort of 2014, 15, 16, 17, and the beginning of 18. By that, I mean things like utilities, dividend-paying stocks, real estate investment trusts if they're in the right sectors, and so on. Those are the kinds of companies that I think still offer you some opportunity in this market and that give you some downside protection from yield and from their defensive nature. These are the kinds of companies that can still generate earnings in sales, even if the economy takes a turn for the worse. So, that's kind of what I've been preaching for a while now. What's interesting, especially in this market rally, is that it's being led by a very odd group of stocks. Historically, and especially before we had the market start to top out in early 2018, it was technology, it was FANG, it was all those very popular kind of companies, while everything else was pretty much falling by the wayside. In this rally, when I look at our Weiss Ratings data and just sort of analyze the character of this rally objectively, what I'm seeing is three groups tend to lead it: gold miners and REITs, and then technology. It's the weirdest sort of mix of stock sectors to be leading that I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, you typically buy gold and gold miners when you're looking for protection from chaos in the market and increased volatility. You typically buy things like REITs because they offer you dividend protection against downside risk and can still generate earnings, again, even in a riskier economy. But you would buy technology stocks when you're extremely confident about growth and the ability of these companies to kind of, you know, grow into very extended valuations. So how the heck can you have all three of those groups rallying at the same time? It's very odd. You throw in things like low volume on this rally and the fact that we're extremely late in the economic and credit cycle, and it still is a suspect rally to me. When I first sort of flipped from being extremely bullish to being relatively bearish and defensive, that was in the sort of February-March timeframe of 2018, the stock market's basically exactly where it was back then now. So anybody who listened to me hasn't really lost anything at all by being cautious. And in fact, if you're in some of these sectors like REITs, if you're in some of the sectors like utilities, you've made a decent chunk of money. You know, the XLU ETF in the U.S. is up about 16% in the last year. The XLK, which is the technology ETF, is up about 7.5% in the last year. So you've made twice the money you could have made in technology, which they talk about every single day on TV, in defensive utility stocks. And again, that just shows that the need for yield protection, for some sort of insulation against volatility, and those types of things that come with investing in safe money stocks, not just the stuff they talk about on TV every 5 seconds.
So this is actually something that you and I have been talking about for a number of months now, is needing to be more selective and picking more of these defensive sectors. But as you said, there's these defensive sectors, but then there's also tech, which has been getting money coming into it. Do you think that is only going to be kind of a short-term bump? Maybe some of these more aggressive investors still trying to seek out some yield, but when they look back on it, whether it's in a month or at the end of this first quarter, they're going to realize that even though they might have some gains there, they're still missing out on much larger gains in some of these more defensive sectors?
I think if you're focused over, you're overly focused on technology and you're trying to chase these big short-term rallies, I think you're going to be sorry. I think that what's happened in the technology space is that these stocks became wildly overowned, overloved, overvalued. And especially when you look at some of these garbage IPOs that have been coming out in the technology space, I mean, we have more tech IPOs coming out right now, or in the last year, coming public. More of those companies are losing money in terms of not having any profits in the year or two before their IPOs, even than we saw at the peak of the dot-com bubble. So you have a bunch of lousy stocks that are able to get money in this market because too much money is flowing into technology. You have a lot of private tech companies that want to go public this year at absolutely ridiculous dot-com era valuations. Some companies, even some of these bigger ones that you talk about, I mean, Uber, we all use its services and so on, but it hasn't made a penny of operating profits on an annual basis in 10 years of operation. How do we know if it's even a real business? We don't. So I think that a lot of this risk and a lot of this behavior, just throwing money at technology stocks, ignoring the lessons of 20 years ago, I think it's a lot of risk in that part of the market. You don't have that cushion from yield. You don't have that valuation cushion for sure. And you have a lot of business risk, especially if I'm right and we're very late in this economic cycle. One thing that hasn't gotten talked a lot about is that banks, from some of the data from the Fed itself and from some of the data from the bankers trade groups, the data shows that delinquencies are starting to rise fairly notably and credit availability is starting to get tighter. There was a great report that comes out from the Fed every quarter that looks at banks, and just they go out there and they ask, hey, are you being more willing to make loans? If you are you seeing more or less demand? Are you charging people more to borrow and so on? They had one thing that looked at the cost of basically the spreads, how much extra interest you're charging somebody to borrow, a commercial borrower. That's actually the reading there was the highest since 2010. So banks are getting stingier with money. If you look at the data from the American Bankers Association on loan delinquencies, the consumer loan delinquency rate averaged over 8 different kinds of loans is the highest since 2013, 6 years ago. So really, you're in a situation where we certainly are not in a recessionary environment yet, but these types of things that are happening, banks getting less willing to make loans, more consumers defaulting on their loans and so on, that's what you see at the tail end of an economic expansion and what you tend to see as you're heading into a bear market. So again, I don't see anything in this rally that changes my opinion of where we are in the cycle. And I think you want to be more defensive. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't find select opportunities here and there, but it means you have to be more selective. You can't just throw money at these tech stocks they talk about every 5 minutes on TV and think you're going to make money in a sustainable basis.
Okay, you bring up some good points there, and it regards liquidity too, talking about how people might be defaulting on loans. It's tougher to get that free or easy money that was available in markets, but the other central banks, including the Fed now, have backed off of some of their more hawkish policies, and as you said, there's still this liquidity available for these garbage IPOs. Do you see liquidity drying up all of a sudden, or is this going to be a long process where eventually either it is through defaults or through even corporate defaults that liquidity dries up, and that's truly what hampers the market and drives everything down?
I think the process is already underway. If you look at, for example, things like housing price appreciation, it's been slowing pretty notably for, several months now in terms of the rate of appreciation. Prices aren't falling, but they are slowing. In overvalued markets like California, you actually have in the month of December sales that are dropping at 20 to 25% year-over-year rates. If you look at the rate of appreciation in commercial property, it's been decelerating for a few quarters now. If you look at, say, the bond market, treasury yields, and you compare the movement off the lows in treasury yields versus the movement off the lows in stocks, it's night and day. The bond market doesn't believe that the economy is going to be growing again just as a result of what the Fed did. So that liquidity isn't driving really, you would expect to see yield curve steepen dramatically. You expect to see interest rates go up a lot if the, bond market was convinced that there's going to be some new spurt of growth, but it's just not happening. So again, you're seeing the bond market much more skeptical of what's going on than you are, say, in stocks. And all this fits with that argument that we're sort of in that late cycle environment. And one thing I'd add too, some people haven't been in this business very long, but I've been involved in following interest rates and real estate and that credit cycle very closely since the mid 1990s. And what's very interesting to me, it's the same thing people say now about QE and about, oh, the Fed can just step in and do what it wants to do, and that's going to save the markets. The same thing they're saying now is what these people were saying 20 years ago about interest rate cuts. But all the Fed interest rate cuts in the 2000 to 2002 bear market didn't stop the bear market. Throughout that point, the Fed was talking dovish and cutting rates, yet stocks kept going down. Obviously, the same exact thing happened again in the 2007 to 2009 bear market. I mean, how many times did the Fed either cut rates or roll out one of these alphabet soup programs, TALF, TAP, TAF, and all that other garbage? And what happened? The stock market went down anyway. Ultimately, the only thing that kind of bottomed things out was that assets got cheap. Housing got cheap. Dot-com stocks crashed, and therefore there were some tech stock bargains amongst the wreckage. That, and I think that may be something similar that we see here. I see a lot of parallels between the early, where we are now, sort of in this cycle, that we were early on in those last two bear markets. So again, it's not 100% confirmed. I'm keeping my eye on some things out there, and I suppose things could change. But nothing I've seen has really changed the general narrative that we're very late in the cycle. You got to play defense. And unlike in the last 9 or 10 years, where shaking hands with the central bank made sense because you were still in the growth phase of the economic cycle and credit was still getting easier, that's not the case anymore. Shaking hands with the Fed is probably a silly thing to do now. And I think that's what the bond market is saying. Why would bond prices not be going down and interest rates not be going up if they believed that what the Fed was doing would change the economic outlook? And just one last thing on that point, this narrative that Fed pivots or pauses after a series of rate hikes is bullish. That's what they say on TV all the time. It would be great if it were actually true, but unfortunately, some of us actually look at the data. And if you go back the last quarter century, there's really only one bullish Fed pivot, meaning a time when the Fed stopped hiking rates, started getting worried about the downside after a series of interest rate hikes. The only time that was ever bullish in the last quarter century was 94 and 95. And then you had a few years after that, or 3 or 4 years after that, where the stock market just kept going up. That was it. The last two times, was right at the peak of the dot-com bubble, right at the peak of the housing bubble. The economy obviously tumbled into recession not too long afterwards, and stocks fell very sharply. So I just don't think that, you can have a lot of confidence that maybe the Fed's going to get this one right. And I think you just got to, for now, continue to do what's been working for a year, be in the defensives that are making more money than the stocks they talk about every day, carry a higher level of cash, which is actually generating some yield because of the interest rate hikes to date, and just, be on the lookout for more volatility and more, more potential surprises. Because my opinion of what happened in December is that it's not all the turmoil we're going to see. It's more like an appetizer of a main course that's coming later.
So just to wrap us up, Mike, where does that leave the U.S. dollar then? I do agree that more people should be in cash and be ready to inject that money if we do get some sort of even more major or severe pullback. But you look at other countries around the world too, and their currency is also struggling. A lot of issues that we're seeing in their market. Do you see the U.S. dollar being that also kind of safety play?
I've said for a long time that Even though it's not the historical pattern, I think both the dollar and gold can go up roughly in tandem as risk-off safety-type plays. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. If you look, like you mentioned, some of these other countries are in a lot worse shape. The Australian Central Bank, just in the last several hours, last day or two, suggested that it might get more dovish, so the Aussie dollar is getting smacked on that. The euro can't seem to get off its downward trend against the dollar. It's been declining for some time because their economy is in very worse shape. You know, so there's a lot of problems elsewhere in the world. So I think by default, you know, the U.S. dollar might actually continue to rally. But I think that might actually happen in tandem with the rise in gold, because I think gold, again, is being purchased as protection, chaos insurance, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, really, if you look at since sort of the August, you know, the summer period, the dollar's been rallying. The U.S. dollar has been rallying since last May, June, and gold has been rallying since, you know, July, August timeframe. So they're already that thesis is already kind of playing out, where both gold and the dollar are rising in tandem. And I think that's likely to be the case, you know, for some time going forward.
All right, Mike, always great having you on the show. I hope that you do have a great money show in Orlando. And for everybody, I do thank you for tuning in to the first hour of this weekend show. Please keep in touch with me, fleck@kereport.com. Any of the companies that I interview or any companies that you think I should be reaching out to and having on the show, or at least talking to them, please let me know. I love getting emails from everybody. Hey, Mike, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks again for your time today.
Thank you.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.